It's a lot of gift shop communities.
Building the gift shop support Camp Hill Hudson's work of building communities with people of all abilities.
Open every day. Information at camphillhudson.org or call 518-697-3361.
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
No, folks, don't turn your dial. You are listening to The Right Opinion Show on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Hudson, and Catskill. And, well, hello, everyone. Good morning, everyone in Columbia and Greene counties in this wonderful but very highly taxed state of New York. Now, I do have a guest sitting patiently next to me, and I'm going to introduce him in a few minutes, but we got to get a few things out of the way first as we lead into the interview today. First of all, many of you were expecting Mike Kelsey to be here today as my guest. Mike is the, well, I think he still is today, the candidate for the 106th AD Assembly District seat held by the incumbent Dee Dee Barrett. After Sue Serino dropped out of that race to run for the Senate, Mike Kelsey was asked by the GOP to run for that seat. Mike approached me to come on the show. It was arranged. It was confirmed. And then he canceled. And I got another guest. Now, Mike will probably be back on the show in September, but I'm not certain of that right now. So I apologize for those of you who tuned in to hear Mike Kelsey. Now, I'm going to lead into our guest today, who is John Wallace of the Oath Keepers. And I'll just say good morning, John.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Now, you know, John, when I joined the Navy quite some time ago, the Navy told me to report to Fort Hamilton in Brooklyn to take my oath. And I stress the fact that all of us that day and every day, you have to take an oath to your country and to the Constitution. And I would imagine if that day when they led me and hundreds of others into the room to take the oath, I imagined if I had refused to take the oath, that would have probably been a deal breaker and they would have sent me on my way. I had no problem taking the oath. I mean, why wouldn't anyone take an oath to their country and to the Constitution like so many others have? And then, of course, many years later, I became a civilian federal employee. And again, I was led into a room with others. And again, I had to take an oath to my country and to the Constitution, which I certainly didn't object to. And, you know, keep in mind, at no point on either of those occasions did anyone say to me, sir, when you're done here, then you can just forget about the Constitution. You can forget about your oath. No, that's not the case at all. In fact, in my Navy experience, there was something I was involved in that was top secret, And I was told that even as a civilian, you cannot talk about this for 8 years, which I had no problem complying with. And that leads me into our guest, who is John Wallace. And John, I'll let you tell the listener, you know, who you are. And, you know, I know you live in Chatham and you're a retired New York State trooper. But tell folks who you are and about your organization, the Oath Keepers, and then we'll let them know why that has become an issue.
Well, basically, I, like you, took an oath when I went in the Army. I was also in the National Guard, and I was in the State Police for 31 years. I retired as a lieutenant colonel, and I never, if you had asked me, would I be involved, not so much politically, but as an activist for the Constitution, I would have said that you're nuts. Just not something that I ever thought of until maybe 15 years ago or so. And my activism, I guess, started on the Bush. I saw a lot of things going on that I thought was unconstitutional.
Where did it start?
It started in, I'd say, around 2006. I started to pay attention more, I believe, and started to read more. And I had written a book back in 98, 99 about military fellow from Columbia County. And I started just to get in and more to read more. And what I found was that the federal government, under both Republican and Democratic administrations, has been chipping away at the people's rights under the Constitution and their unalienable rights, which of course existed before the Constitution. That's what the Bill of Rights is about. And eventually, I got involved with an organization called the Oath Keepers. And what drew me to them was the fact that the main idea of the organization was that the people who at one time in their life had taken an oath, as both of us had done several times, was to honor that oath. And I'm just going to, if you don't mind, I'm going to read it quickly, which is the oath which everybody pretty much takes. It's very short.
Sure, I'm glad you brought that.
And it says, basically, I do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and that I will bear true faith and allegiance to same, and that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, pledging my life, my fortune, and my sacred honor, so help me God. And somewhere along the line, the organization, we have about 40,000 Oath Keepers currently in the United States that are formal members of the organization, and we are growing. As people learn what's going on with the federal government, I mean, Bush was bad enough. This president is worse. By executive order, he's doing he's taking a lot of rights away from the people. He's basically destroyed our border, our security. But in any case, the history of the Oath Keepers goes back to Hurricane Katrina. And some of the things that Oath Keepers, we tried to convince active duty police and active duty military people not to obey certain orders that they may get in the future.
Orders that are unconstitutional.
That it would be unconstitutional. I'll give you examples, and this is how the organization started. During Hurricane Katrina, which was a disaster by both the city, the state, and to a lesser degree, the federal government, but the federal government came in later. What happened was, the police chief in the city of New Orleans decided at one point, because there was looting going on in certain parts of the city, that he would take everybody's guns. And they sent basically police officers, you know, which were deputies, sheriffs, and National Guard people, around to people's homes and confiscated all the weapons. So
And let me just throw in here that this would have been at a time when people probably felt the most need to protect themselves and their property.
Right. I mean, there was a lot of crimes going on being committed. People were, especially if the houses were vacant, they were burglarizing the houses, taking all the goods, but they were going from house to house. So people needed these guns to protect themselves. So rather than going after the looters, they went after the law-abiding citizen and confiscated their guns. So one of the orders that the Oath Keepers now says that you should not obey if you're a police officer or in the military is to take citizens' guns who have a constitutional right to protect themselves with them.
Yeah, if they're licensed and obtained properly.
Yes, yeah. And what I'm just saying is that eventually that case went to court, and it was found to be unconstitutional that the police and the government authorities at the time did not have the authority to do that. It was a violation of the Constitution. The second issue is that during the course of the hurricane, people were fleeing the city of New Orleans. And at one point, some people were crossing a bridge which went over into the next county. They were met by police officers from New Orleans who pushed them back, and then there was a couple of shots fired, and two American citizens who were trying to escape the horrors of that situation were shot by the police, in effect keeping them prisoners within that city that they could not get out. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. But eventually, five of those New Orleans police officers were found guilty of murder. So,
which you agree with?
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, what we say as Oath Keepers is that people should not, police officers should not obey an order to keep people confined in an emergency. Let them get out. It just didn't make any sense.
And it doesn't appear to be constitutional.
Oh, it's unconstitutional all the way.
Which is the main thing. Now, let me I don't want to keep the listening audience's suspense any longer as to the root reason why you're here, and that is that your organization of lovely people, because I've been to some of your meetings, your organization has been declared a right-wing extremist group by the New York State Police. This is why you're here. Now, tell us about that. And
well, on June 14th of this year, an organization called the New York State Intelligence Center issued a counterterrorism bulletin, number 1407, in case somebody wanted to know, and talked about the recent spike in violence targeting law enforcement. And they pointed out three different cases, one which was a young fella in Canada who had shot and killed three Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And they said, well, what was the reason for it? Well, this fella had lost his job. His friend had been killed by the police. He was a heavy drug user, and he was obviously had some anti-police feelings or whatever. So they said, well, one of the reasons that he connects him to the Oath Keepers is that he took an interest in the Second Amendment battle going on in the United States.
Was he an Oath Keeper?
No.
I mean, did he go to an Oath Keeper meeting?
No.
Okay, so in other words, because the Oath Keepers are a group that is pro-Constitution and therefore pro-Second Amendment, they just made this association.
They made a connection based on the fact that he believed that people had a right to have guns.
Okay.
In the United States. I mean, there's no
connection. Right.
But that's their first connection.
Okay.
The second connection is a fellow who, down in Georgia, Forsyth County, was a person who had been arrested numerous times by the police down in that county in Georgia. He also was thought to be a sovereign. Now, a sovereign is a person who is anti-government. These are people who don't have driver's licenses, they don't register their cars, they don't have insurance, and they have been involved over the years in shootouts with police. But in any case, he was going into the Forsyth County Court in Georgia to answer criminal charges, including drug charges, and he was coming in with firearms and bandoliers and all sorts of stuff, and he was shot by deputy sheriffs going into the courthouse. And the connection that that they made there was that he was a sovereign. Well, the Oath Keepers have nothing to do with the sovereign. We are not sovereign. We don't believe in the sovereigns. They're not associated with us in any way. But that was their second connection. And the third connection was this husband and wife team, Gerard and Amanda Miller. They had shot and killed two Las Vegas police officers who were in a diner or something. They just went in and shot them. And then they left, went to Walmart, where there was a shootout with the police. He was killed, and eventually they think the wife committed suicide. But what they said there was that they had gone, these two people had gone to the Bundy Ranch down in Texas. Now, in Texas, a lot of different groups had gone down to help. There was Oath Keepers down there for a while. And they were thrown out because they were a little bit oddballs, and they were...
They were thrown out by the...
by the Bundy...
By the Bundy Ranch, right. By the Bundy supporters,
yeah,
themselves.
Yeah, basically one of the sons at the ranch was kind of the coordinator for security, and the different organizations would work through them. But these people just showed up, and they people knew right away that there was these were people were not people you want.
Yes.
Because they would shoot.
And then I believe it turned out that this gentleman... had attended one Oath Keeper meeting
somewhere,
not in New York.
No,
and so that was the third connection.
Kind of like you,
yeah.
Yeah, you attended it, right?
That is why I played the Twilight Zone,
right,
as the opening song, folks. Because sometimes I think I'm in the political Twilight Zone. So John is a very respectable guy, real estate salesperson. Here in Columbia County, solid citizen, never been in any trouble that I'm aware of, and served the state as not only as a New York State trooper, but you were in a very senior.
I was a lieutenant colonel when I was in charge of the whole uniform force.
Yeah, so here it is, the organization that you actually retired from is the organization. With this issue, and I want the listener to know that I think most of the membership of the Oath Keepers are either current or former law enforcement people. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, and veterans. I mean, we do have active members of the military. We have active members of a wide variety of police forces.
Right.
And all we're trying to do is educate them.
Right.
To tell them we do have... You know, I'll give you one more example. This is the final connection. Is a fellow named Michael Brian Vandenberg. And they pointed this out, that he was a guest speaker at one of the Oath Keeper meetings in Liberty, New York, down in Sullivan County. And he's a member of, a founder of, the 3% Patriot Movement, which is basically says that 3% of the people in the original revolution were the activist people fighting the English. And that the rest of the people in various stages of support, but there's 3%. It's a little bit inaccurate. I think it's more than like 5%. But they're the 3%ers. They do have training. They do go out and have some firearms training and stuff like that. We don't do that. Oath Keepers don't do that. But anyway, they said he was at a meeting. Therefore, being that he was welcomed as a guest speaker by the Oath Keepers, we are associated now with the 3%ers. And one or two other groups that they mentioned. But my response to that is, so that makes us a threat to the state of New York. But what about the district attorneys, the sheriffs, active duty sheriffs, who also speak at our meetings, talking about the SAFE Act? And
okay, so, and of course, you and I have had some emails. We've spoken on the phone. I've been to one or two meetings. I'm not a member in any way I'm aware of. So I guess I'm guilty by connection in a way of being a right-wing extremist. So how has this manifested itself in the way your organization operates? How are people reacting? What are you doing about it?
Well, what the first reaction was when this this bulletin came out was we have, you know, so many active duty police officers, and of course their concern was, what am I, a member of a you know, some right wing extremist organization? They had never seen the bulletin, but they heard about the bulletin and they heard about what it said, and of course, nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, we are a nonviolent group that believes in the Constitution, and we kind of, if you called Martin Luther King or Mahatma Gandhi a right-wing extremist because they also saw unconstitutional laws, and they participated in civil disobedience, and they just didn't participate.
Well, I think, John, it's common knowledge that the right doesn't participate in civil disobedience that is in any way significant. It's the left that has always engaged in civil disobedience. I think it's well known that demonstrations that have involved breaking storefront windows, standing on cars, calling police pigs, the Students for Democratic Society, that whole Vietnam era time, this was street agitation. It was violent. People were being burned in effigy. People were being injured all the time. And that was street activism from the left. As much as the media would love for even one person associated with the libertarian movement or the Tea Party movement or the Oath Keepers to do something like that so that they could make it a headline, it just doesn't happen.
But that's different. In other words, Martin Luther King, whether it was going into all white restaurants and sitting down, or the back of the bus, and so they were nonviolent. They didn't really commit any crimes. Neither did obviously Gandhi.
And Martin Luther King was a registered Republican, by the way.
Well, he was branded as a communist, mm-hmm. by the federal government. What I'm saying is, the Oath Keepers, basically, when it comes to the SAFE Act, our position is, as an organization, noncompliance with the law because it's unconstitutional.
Right, but my point is the worst thing that I'm aware of that the Oath Keepers have been accused of is destroying grass at City Hall Park in Albany by accident or, you know, that kind of thing.
There's
nothing disruptive that I'm aware of that has ever taken place by...
By the way, that was a group. That was more than just the Oath Keepers. It was basically the Capital Region Liberty groups that got together,
okay.
who offered to pay for that. By the way, we offered to not only pay for it, but we would actually replant the grass if they. And it was weather. It was
right.
It was weather related.
Right.
It was turned to mud.
Right, and of course, Occupy Wall Street, which is more to the left. I'm not aware that they would have done the same thing. Maybe they have, and I'm not. What I'm trying to do here is point out that the left certainly has a bigger resume in regard to disruptive type civil disobedience than the right does. The right just doesn't participate in that for the most part.
No, I agree.
Yeah. Now, so. How are your members reacting? I mean, do you find that members now are a little afraid about being associated with the group? Are people bailing? Are they not showing up at meetings? What's going on?
No, the fact that perhaps it might be stimulating our members. Because part of it is we're educating people. You know, and you go back to the Occupy movement. We actually teamed up at one time after the passage of the SAFE Act, and we had two members of Occupy Albany. There's a common ground on certain things.
Yes.
And they actually went with us, and we handed out basically briefs on why they should not have passed that law in New York State the way they did. I mean, if they had an open discussion, it would be completely different.
That's interesting. I, too, was approached by a leader of the Occupy Wall Street movement because he drew an accurate connection between their philosophy and my own in regard to government overreach, and felt that there should be a connection between Occupy Wall Street and liberty-based groups, patriot-based groups. And I think that he had a point. Now, John, let me ask you something. Is your last name is Wallace? Were your grandparents from where were they from?
My father was from Scotland.
Okay. Did he was born in Scotland?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And my mother was born here.
Okay. And so you have immigrant roots.
Yes.
And my paternal and maternal grandparents were Ukrainian. Kiev and Odessa. So I too am from immigrant roots, and I believe your family came here like legally.
Oh yeah, I think we're all immigrants in North America and South America as well. In fact, even the Native Americans, the Indians, came from somewhere else. They
right.
came over through Alaska when. Into the what would be now the United States.
Yeah, so. and I feel that the left wrongly accuses the right of being anti-immigration. I keep correcting people. No, we're anti-illegal immigration.
Right.
You can't leave out that word.
And
there's a huge
right.
difference between. And I know we're going off in a little yeah. different direction here, but this is all related to the Constitution and the integrity of our country. And
you know, they're very selective, by the way. You know, because most of the people in you know, in Mexico and South and Central America are descendants of mixtures of the European Spaniards and the Portuguese. With the exception, obviously, of the you know the people who have not intermarried, the Mayan Indians, they are the same as the Americans, descendants of European conquistadors.
Well, this is an excellent segue into our break song, and this is Willie Nelson, and. Living in the Promised Land, hopefully. So here we go with Willie Nelson and Living in the Promised Land. Dedicated to all you people all over the world who want to be Americans and you're willing to do it legally.
Give us your tired week.
You're willing to stand on long lines.
Strong.
Fill out all kinds of
Ring
papers. Spend years trying to become an American citizen.
We will sing along. Leave us your broken dreams. We'll give them time to mend. There's still a lot of love. Living in the Promised Land. Living in the Promised Land. Our dreams are made of steel. Prayer of every man is to know how freedom feels. There is a winding road across the shifting sand and room for everyone. Living in the Promised Land. So they came from the distant isle, nameless woman, faithless child, like a bad dream. Till there was no room at all, no place to run, and no place to fall. Give us your daily bread. We have have no shoes to wear, no place to call our own, only this cross to bear. We are the multitudes, lend us a helping hand. Is there no love anymore living in the promised land?
Well, that was Willie Nelson, Living in the Promised Land. A shout out to all the great people that have come here legally from countries all over the world. And now, you've been listening to The Right Opinion Show on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Hudson, and Catskill. My name is Ed Furtick, Eddie F on radio. And my guest today is actually another radio area radio show personality, but we won't go into detail on that. His name is John Wallace, real estate agent, retired New York State trooper, and a member of the Oath Keepers organization. And before we get back to our interview with John, I want to mention that coming up at 11, right after this show, is Tyson with Zooms. Tyson's put in a long day today. He was actually doing the morning show and doing a great job of it. And I don't know where he is right now, but he's going to be back in Studio A in a half hour or so. So don't turn your dial. And then, of course, at noontime, the Shomer Show. Now, next episode of The Right Opinion is July 23rd. And our guest then will be the Libertarian candidate for governor of New York, Michael McCarthy. Or is it Michael McDermott? I think it's Michael McDermott. I'm sorry, Mike.
Michael M.
But Michael M. will be here on July 23rd. And they are very excited about being here because I keep getting emails. So I'm looking forward to that. And keep in mind, folks, that WGXC has a great website at WGXC.org. You can access archives of all our shows there, including this one, of course, and you can play it over and over again. So please think about checking out the archives at WGXC.org, and there are events posted there that are easy to access, and you can post your own event, and our website gets a lot of hits, so it's a good way to promote your event, and the website is easy to use. All right, so we are going back to interview with John Wallace, and keep in mind, folks, that the opinions expressed here are those of the host and the guest, and not necessarily the opinions of WGXC management. Okay, so John, has this situation happened in other states? Are you getting reports that other state law enforcement agencies have declared the Oath Keepers a right-wing extremist group?
No. You know, if you go back a couple of years, there was a report issued out of Missouri And it was the same kind of a report in which the intelligence division, I don't know if it was the Missouri Highway Patrol or some state agency in Missouri, came out with a report that law enforcement agencies should be aware and take note that the following groups could cause a danger to police officers. And the organizations that they talked about were veterans organizations, the Ron Paul, anybody that had a Ron Paul sticker on his car or her car should be dealt with suspicion that they were associated with right-wing groups, and a few other. I think there's a fellow named Bob Barr who was running for president at the time. And anybody that had a Bob Barr sticker on his car should be suspicious that they were right-wing extremists. So what happened was the organizations got together, the Ron Paul movement and a few other people. Ron Paul was at that time was a U.S. congressperson, and got together and said, well, what if you had identified Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson or the NAACP as some kind of a terrorist organization if they had stickers or something on their car? The people would be outraged by declaring them terrorists or a threat to police or whatever. And within 30 days, that entire report was removed from Missouri.
So are you taking any concrete steps to get your organization removed
yeah,
from that list?
Yeah, basically we're in the process of writing a response to that bulletin. To point out the fallacy of their connections that they, I mean, they could connect you because you attended an Oath Keeper meeting to that shooting in Canada. It just doesn't make any sense, the connections that they made. So we're basically going through each of their connections and how they connect us to become right-wing extremists and a threat to the police when we're the opposite. I mean, our membership is made up. Half of it are police.
Yeah, and of course the other issue is if they're going to have a list, why shouldn't the left-wing extremist groups be on it?
Well, if you look at the source of their article, there's a lot of footnotes throughout their report. And of course some of those sources are questionable. I don't have to mention who they are, but they're all on the left, let's say. There are no Islamic terrorist organizations identified by the state of New York, even though that you do have a compound out in Delaware County called Islamburg, is actually the name of the town now, the little hamlet they have, which there's training going on and by radical Islamists from New York City, basically. They haven't been put on the list. Why would they put honorable people who have never been in trouble because we believe that the people of New York have an unalienable right, as outlined in the Constitution, to have firearms.
Yeah, it does seem that during this administration there has been more attacks on the Constitution. I think there are a lot more people that may be questioning if we should follow the Constitution, which is tragic, or people that feel that, hey, it's just a piece of paper and we have to do what we have to do today. I don't agree with that. I mean, I think in every nation, the Constitution basically is the country. The Constitution is like the Articles of Incorporation for a business. It is the country. It represents what the country is. So
I
naturally, especially people who have taken an oath to follow the Constitution would take it seriously. But I'm going to go off in another direction now while we still have time, and I'm going to read something by the bureau chief of the, I guess this is a Washington bureau chief, Goff Earl, for the New York Post, and he's talking about a recent Quinnipiac University poll. Washington, it's not the kind of history Barack Obama planned on making, but Americans now rate him as the worst president since World War II. With 2 years left to go in his second term, Obama beat out predecessor George W. Bush, who left office during a steep economic downturn and an unpopular war, for the dubious distinction a new Quinnipiac University poll found. Respondents were asked to rate the best and worst presidents from the list of 12 since World War II. One-third picked Obama, and Bush came in second with 28. By comparison, only 13% cited Richard Nixon, who resigned under the cloud of the Watergate scandal. 8% chose Jimmy Carter, who left office with a stalled economy and having been unable to win the release of American hostages held in Iran. When it comes to which president Americans consider the best, Ronald Reagan cleans it up with 35% picking the Gipper. And there's more, but I'll stop there. So, John Wallace, what do you think about that? You think the Quinnipiac poll is correct?
Well, I think it is, but I'm not such a believer in polls anyway. They could be manipulated. Depends on the type of question or whatever. But just in talking to people, and I do like to talk to people who maybe don't necessarily believe the way I do in the Constitution, because I think an exchange of ideas is a good thing. But I think this president, as did Bush, using executive orders to bypass the Constitution has hurt the country. It's hurt our freedom. I mean, we have regulatory agencies now at the federal level indiscriminately identifying mice as endangered species, pushing people off farms. They are declaring certain parts of the country as under federal protection. They're just changing the rules. I mean, the state of New York, as bad as it is, at least in state agencies cannot issue new regulations without the approval of the people or the legislature. They have to go through the legislature to make a change. What's happening under this administration, and maybe before that, is, but I'm just aware of it, this administration, is that they're issuing regulations. They're changing the meaning of words to expand their power.
And executive orders, which are even worse, because it circumvents the Senate and Congress. Now, some people would say that, well, every president uses executive orders, and every president has. But presidents usually use executive orders not in a way that's meant to get around dissenting opinions in a duly elected Congress. It's usually used in the opposite way, to get something going that's clearly acceptable to our government and to avoid some long bureaucratic process. This president seems to be using it when he knows there's opposition in the duly elected Congress, and therefore, well, we just won't use Congress to decide the issue.
Well, I think the case, it's not to cut you off, but I think the case here is, with the current administration, is the executive orders are actually, almost everyone that comes out penalizes the American people. Whereas an executive, there's probably a good time to use executive orders in the interest of speed and everything else. But to constantly, I mean, this administration, without legislation, but through the EPA regulation, is putting the coal industry out of business.
Right.
And a lot of people are becoming unemployed. And we're not, through executive order, not issuing permits to drill for oil on our land.
And by the way, I'm bringing these things up to show the motivation behind a group like the Oath Keepers existing. Why there is that feeling these days by people that have paid attention to the Constitution that things aren't going quite right, you know. And by the way, I was listening to Democracy Now! On this station, and Julian Assange was being interviewed, and he said on Democracy Now, and this is not an exact quote, that Obama has been more restrictive in regard to free journalism than all previous American presidents combined. And he didn't get any argument.
Well,
when he said
there's no more photographs being taken inside the White House. All the photos now are taken by a White House photographer and given to a reporter. So they're not even allowed to take pictures of the president anymore inside the White House.
Let me read something by the City Hall bureau chief for the New York Post. His name is Yoav Gonen, City Hall bureau chief. And actually, it was a headline, sick. And now his health plan will slam New Yorkers. Insurance firms participating in New York's Obamacare health exchange are seeking double-digit hikes for patients' medical premiums in 2015, new figures reviewed by the Post reveal. The average hike sought by insurers for individual plans is 12%, but a number of firms serving large numbers of patients want to boost individual premiums by nearly 20%. Leading the charge is Excellus Health Plan, which is seeking to sock more than 24,000 members with a 19.7% hike. The even larger MVP Health Plan, with nearly 33,000 customers, is seeking a 19% boost. While a number of smaller plans put in for lesser increases or, in a number of cases, decreases, Health Republic Insurance of New York, the largest on the exchange with more than 68,000 members, requested a 15.2% increase for individual plans. The proposed rate increases call into question one of the goals of the Affordable Care Act, curbing runaway health care costs. The article goes on. I'll stop now. So, John, do you think the signature program of the Obama administration, the so-called Affordable Health Care Act, has been affordable, and is it?
Well, I think what's going to happen is, by executive order, that law has been changed, I think, 33 times or somewhere in that vicinity, where exemptions have been given to unions. There's been exemptions to certain companies, certain groups, and they've been. The damage has been postponed, and a lot of it has to do with elections. By these rates are going to go up. A lot of these unions are going to lose their Cadillac plans, and a lot of individuals who work for corporations, small companies, a lot of companies now are reducing the time. A lot of the new jobs created are a direct result of Obamacare. We're losing the full-time jobs, and we're gaining part-time jobs because the employers can't afford to give people the insurance because, just what you said, the rates are going to constantly go up. The whole thing was a fraud as far as the rates were going to go down. Everybody was going to keep their plan, all that, those other things. But this is across the board. I mean, this is throughout the country. The rates are all going up. There's still 1.5 million people that haven't fully identified themselves who signed up for Obamacare.
Right. I mean, I think what we're getting at here is, if the American people had been approached with another dialogue. For example, listen, folks, this is what we need to do, and you're not going to like it that much because some of you, maybe a lot of you, are going to have to move into other health care plans, even though you like what you have, and you may have to pay more for it, and basically, we're going to need you all to spend more money to do this. And at least that would have been honest.
Well, Nancy Pelosi said early on that you have to pass it in order to read it, which was kind of insane. But this is the classic. In other words, it was passed, but it gave the Secretary Sebelius at the time of Health the power to write regulations. So a lot of these, what's happening, a lot of the problems that we're having is because of regulations that were issued and made up after the legislation was passed. So I think we have to revisit that law.
Yeah. Well, the president is at around 41-42% in the polls. I'm not making this
up. Congress got an exemption too, by the way, of that law.
Yeah. Well, you know, whenever you hear someone in the media citing Obama's low approval rating, they always throw in, "But Congress is at," but that's a false statistic because the president is in one party. The Congress is two, if not three, you know, because the Democrats don't like Congress because there are too many Republicans. The Republican voters don't like Congress because there's too many Democrats.
Right.
And then you have the conservative faction, which Wolf Blitzer said is ostensibly now a third party that has problems with both those two. So, of course, if you're polling someone, they're not going to say anything good about the Congress. The fact is that Democrats, if you say, "Do you like the Democrats in Congress?" They do, for the most part.
Yep.
If you ask Republicans, "Do you like the Republicans in Congress?" They do, for the most part. But that's not, as you mentioned, that's not how they work, because they want to show it's not the president's fault, it's the Congress's fault. But anyway, now John Boehner is talking about suing the president for violating the Constitution through executive overreach and executive orders. What do you think about that in 1 minute?
Well, I would hope that John Boehner would do something. I mean, we have an open border. We have a president that's going down today to do fundraisers in Texas and not even showing up at the border. And,
right.
And part of his job is to protect the security and the sovereignty of the country. He's not doing that. So I don't.
Right.
Wanna, I know you only have a little bit of time, but
yeah.
Do the people know that you were singing that Willie Nelson song when you were doing it?
I do sing along. These are from my days with the Pulsations. You see, when I sing along, it's so good that people don't know I'm doing it. You know, because I usually pick one of the harmony roles in the song and chime into it. But I know.
Okay.
So. You're good. You're good. Well, no, you're not so good. You're sitting right here watching me do it. The other thing I want to mention is the fact that the president recently mentioned that he was sending 300 advisors to Iraq. Of course, they're armed and they'll fight to protect themselves. But there were 300 advisors. Then, oops, a few days went by. Oops, I need 500 more to protect the airport to do that. Now it was 800. Oops. We forgot about the 1,000 troops ready to go on an amphibious assault ship that's in the area. Oops. Now we're at 1,800. So it seems like there's potential here for American involvement in Iraq under this president to escalate. You think so?
I don't think so. The people don't want any part of it.
I agree with that.
I mean, this is very similar to the Catholics and the Protestants fighting in Northern Ireland. The British got stuck in the middle of it for many, many decades before they finally had an agreement to get out. These people have been fighting for more than 1,000 years, since around 600 A.D. They've been fighting this battle. And we do have the ISIS is definitely targeting the United States. So they're the enemy of the United States.
And I agree with engaging the enemy of the United States. But the thing here is that this president can evidently get away with having troops in Iraq. And I'm betting that it goes beyond the 1,800 that are there now. But we have to bring things to a close pretty soon. You've been listening to The Right Opinion Show on WGXC 90.7 FM. Come back and be with us on July 23rd. And Tyson is getting ready to be here with Zooms in a little bit. John Wallace, thank you. I
My
hope
pleasure.
The next time I see you, not in jail for being a right-wing extremist, a nice guy
yeah.
with you, like you,
yep.
from Chatham, New York, lovely, lovely town. And we're going to go out today with a little more Willie Nelson, and that would be talking about New Orleans. That would be the city of New Orleans. So let's go with that, folks. See you next time.
Riding on the city of New Orleans, Illinois Central, Monday morning rail. 15 cars and 15 restless riders, 3 conductors and 25 sacks on mail. All along the southbound Odyssey, the train pulls out at Kankakee and rolls along past houses, farms, and fields. Passing trains that have no name, and freight yards full of old black men, and the graveyards of the rusted automobile. Good morning. Bag that holds the bottle. Feel the wheels rumbling beneath the floor. And the sons of Pullman porters and the sons of engineers ride their father's magic carpet made of steel. Mothers with their babes asleep, rocking. I'll be gone.